2019. We're long overdue for a fresh episode of Like a Mustard Seed, but we're back, and you can look forward to a steady schedule ahead. Today's episode brings us around the table with two students and Professor Dan Ulrich, who studied Mark in Puerto Rico this last January. Joining them is our new host, Sam, and now they have the ground.
I'm here with Susan Liller, Jack Regner, and Dan Ulrich to talk about the Puerto Rico trip that several of the students here took over the Jan term. And so, Dan, what's the official name of the class?
Santa Biblia, the Gospel of Mark in Puerto Rico.
This is the second take of that, so Dan had some practice getting his pronunciation right. So I think for a lot of us, a lot of people like me, a lot of seminarians who we are all obsessive NPR listeners, I think when we think of Puerto Rico, we mostly hear about it in the context of a natural disaster, an economic problem, or something like that. So I was hoping we could start out by talking about some of the beautiful and remarkable things that you guys saw while you were over there before we move into the recent issues with the hurricanes and the theological questions that you guys were exploring. So can you guys talk about any really remarkable sights you saw over there or anything like that?
I can. We went to Vega Baja Beach, the beach near there. That beach was awesome. Uh-huh. The beach itself had some palm trees on it. The water there was very blue and warm. And because it was kind of an inlet, it was swimmable. Unlike most oceans, even though this was an inlet off the ocean, that was beautiful. And then just the variety of terrain from that, you could go up to high in the mountains, and I thought the variety of terrain was just very beautiful.
Wow. I did not get to go to a beach during my Jan term. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I maybe should have reconsidered.
I think we hit a low of 78 when we were there. Well, you were under 6 inches of snow and cold.
Mm-hmm. Did Dan and Jack, did you see anything like that?
Well, there's an amazing amount of flora that is there. Birds, tree frogs, a lot of, they consider it the Enchanted Island there. And I can see in many ways where that would be a good name for it.
So we were there mostly to be with the people. Mm-hmm. And we met amazing people, wonderful, loving, caring people who are called by Spirit to bless others. And we were blessed through hospitality and through many conversations.
So, Dan, you mentioned the people. What kind of local interactions were you guys having there? Were you working with churches or with other groups?
Well, we started out with stays at two retreat centers or parishes with the Capuchin community. And we also had a day at Juana Diaz, where they have a big public celebration of Three Kings Day. And that was exciting. But most of our time was with the Vega Baja Church of the Brethren in the north part of the island. We had a series of bilingual intercultural Bible studies on the Gospel of Mark there in the evenings. And we stayed with host families who were very gracious in their hospitality up there. So it was a good experience to interact with people in that congregation and with a few that came from other congregations.
So how on earth did the Church of the Brethren get to Puerto Rico? I don't think I can think of a paler group denomination than the Church of the Brethren that I know in Illinois. So do you have any idea about the history of that church there?
Well, the Church of the Brethren began in Puerto Rico around the time of World War II. Brethren volunteers who were conscious objectors to serving in World War II came with civilian public service and worked on public health in the area of Castañer, which is in the mountains in the western part of the island. They didn't come to start a church. They came to serve the people, but they did worship, and people came, and a congregation grew out of that community. That was the only Church of the Brethren congregation in Puerto Rico for quite a while, but church planning efforts have resulted in seven more congregations, and the Vega Baja Church is one of the larger of those.
seven churches. Maybe you guys should have done Revelation instead of Marcus. Jack and Susan, you guys stayed with host families. Can you say anything about your experience with them?
Oh, they were absolutely wonderful, caring people. And even though Susan and I were 40 or 50 years removed from our Spanish, fortunately, they were bilingual themselves, mm-hmm. and greeted us with local foods, and interesting conversation, very comfortable quarters that we slept in. Just I can't say enough for the hospitality that we received from everyone, not just our host families. We had opportunity to interface with people in the public square, and everyone was very welcoming to us, even those of us that couldn't speak Spanish very well.
That's great.
And Spanish is definitely the language of choice on Puerto Rico.
I will echo a lot of what Jack said and add to it. Our host families were not expected to feed us. We were budgeted and planned to eat our own breakfast at the nearby church that we would start each day, but they insisted that they feed us breakfast. And so as good guests, we accepted, and it was delicious breakfast. As well as providing us dinner a couple nights during the week as well. So food is a very important part of their hospitality, but it's not their only hospitality. The family that Jack and I were staying with, their grandson was staying with them sometimes. He does his high school work online, and so he has time during the day, and he would spend quite a bit of time there. And so giving up his room for one of us, he slept on the floor in the living room, and as well as attended some of our adventures and going to different churches and places. And as much as I think he got out of those visits quite a bit, we got it out a lot of from him, his offering, his input, and being willing to travel with us for a few days. Again, hospitality. The people in general. Yeah, when we would go to a restaurant, we were treated well. At the Three Kings Days parade, a lot of people there, but we were treated well by all the crowds. The guy, when I was at a concession stand, the guy in front of me who had ordered obviously recognized that I didn't speak Spanish, and the guy that was serving did. So this young gentleman offered to translate for me. So we're treated well by the host families and by all around.
That's wonderful to hear. Now, I do want to hear more about those adventures you alluded to, but I've decided to torture myself more by asking about the food more specifically. What did you guys, what were some of the highlights of that while you were there?
Well, you got to love bananas after you've been to Puerto Rico, because the plantains are a staple part of the diet there. Not only that, but I gained a new appreciation for rice and beans while I was there as well, and chicken.
I like that they add garlic to all kinds of stuff. whereas we have ketchup on the table, they have a mixture of ketchup, mayonnaise, and garlic, and I'm a garlic person. That was awesome. And cinnamon. They do a lot of cinnamon, especially with their breakfast. I don't know what we had for breakfast each morning, but it was different all the time. And the one kind of porridge consistency, it was awesome. I should have got the recipe for that for my sister to make, of course, not me.
Any standouts for you, Dan?
I love the mofongo. Mofongo is a mashed plantain concoction that's nicely seasoned, and it's typically filled with meats and sauce and various things, and it was just delicious. Had that two nights.
Wow. So about those adventures, you mentioned the Three Kings Day. Was that was a parade that you guys got to visit?
Yeah, actually, in Puerto Rico, Three Kings Day is really more on a par than Christmas Day is for children. That's the day that they get their gifts. The three kings bring the gifts and leave them under the tree. So in this parade, many of the organizations in the area bring their own three kings, as well as bands or musical groups or people that dance. And they bring all these talents to that parade. And then it's a big celebration with the bishop, the Catholic bishop of that diocese that has a religious service there as well. Besides a huge craft fair, and food vendors everywhere.
Yeah, we commented on that parade as far as a little bit different slant than the Christmas parades in the mainland here in the States. In the mainland, you know, Santa Claus is the big ending of the parade and what everyone's looking for. Here at the Three Kings Day, though, the ending are the three kings coming, and right before them is actually Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus. So as much as it is very lively and with music and dancing and so forth, the theme definitely is more is centered more around the biblical story of Christ and the kings coming than our Christmas parades here in the States.
So pop quiz, can you guys name all three of them? Oh, I know the names aren't exactly.
No.
That wasn't part of it.
Melkor. Mm-hmm.
I can never remember the third one either. Casper. Yeah. Casper the Friendly Ghost. That's right.
There's a lot of mixture of traditions in Puerto Rico. That is, you do see Santa Claus here and there, and you also. We also have gifts sometimes on Christmas Day, and it just depends on what families celebrate. Many families have trees, but also the children will put out straw or hay or grass for the camels or the horses to the king's ride. And
I still holding up the surfboards.
That'd be in a box, and the straw is taken, and then the gift appears. So not always under a tree or in a stocking.
The big debate was whether or not the kings came on camels or horses, according to Puerto Rican legacy. We had all sorts of different depictions of that.
And of course, the biblical story doesn't tell you any of it. Nor does it tell you that three kings or three wives.
Only three kings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are three gifts, but all the magoi, the magi, are not numbered.
I hope you didn't tell that to any Puerto Rican children. Ruined.
I did not say a word about that.
You'd ruin their nice holiday. Dan's walking around like the Neil deGrasse Tyson of holidays over there. So what about other, you mentioned local traditions. Did you guys, were there any local traditions that you guys didn't recognize that were non-American traditions other than the Three Kings Day, or were the rest of them somewhat similar to what we have?
Well, you will find in Puerto Rico that as people meet and greet each other in public, and very much to different than here in the States, there's an awful lot of hugging and kissing going on, and that you wouldn't find people feeling like they here in this in the northern area of the United States that would be the case. They're very passionate people in terms of that, and they do recognize their friends and their acquaintances.
So to move into your guys' experiences with the churches there, with the church, the main church and the two other churches. So you said you did a weekly Bible study. Was that your main interaction with the churches, or did you guys have other programs going on?
Well, we did. We visited several other things. We mentioned that the first several days we spent time with the brothers, Cappuccino, we had a professor that came in from the Evangelical Seminary there, gave us a presentation on Mark. Mm-hmm. When we went down to the southern part of the island,
Ponce,
and stayed there one night, we had Father Roberto, who is a Catholic priest there, who spoke with us as well. But we did have interactions with other churches besides the Vega Baja mm-hmm. Church. Mm-hmm.
So the Vega Baja Church is where we had the evening Bible study, and so that's where we got to know. But people from other churches were invited, and I think a couple did come. And so we met for a couple hours each night as we studied a certain part of Mark, and we heard two sermons on that scripture, one in English and one in Spanish. So the local people got to preach on it, as well as then we who came over to visit Puerto Rico were also given the opportunity to preach on it. We held a small group discussions on those scriptures, and all those times were quite a learning experience. But our trips then to other churches were in various parts. We got to see what some of the outreach activities were that they were doing. One of them, we actually then went to a boys' home. It would be kind of like for what we would call foster kids. And so we did a service project there and got to know a little bit more about that operation. Another day, we went to go visit a place called Casa Pueblo. I think in Adjuntas. It is a place that was one of the very few places, and I'm moving maybe a little bit ahead, but to when the hurricane did come, it still had power because of it had created a solar panel array, and that was a very, refreshing place to see, and they are helping others throughout the island in that regard. So we were exposed to quite a few different settings.
Now, to talk about the hurricane a little bit, what effects did you see there of the recent hurricanes, and what was your experiences with the after effects of that? Did it seem to be, was it better than you expected, worse than you expected? What was your experience?
Well, initially I didn't see a lot of damage initially, but we were near the more populated areas of the island. When we did visit Old San Juan, it was apparent, definitely outside the city walls, in the poorer areas of town, we could see the blue tarps still after a year and a half of people that had still temporary shelter, temporary roofs on their houses. Even within the walled city, which is generally a upscale area, there were an awful lot of abandoned buildings or buildings that demolished through the in between good, really nice buildings. There would be buildings that had collapsed, interiors that were totally a mess. But as you went farther from the bigger cities, you could see much more of the storm damage.
Susan, did you have any experiences with that?
Again, in the San Juan area, across on the outside of the old fortress wall, definitely that was an area that you could notice. But I guess I was surprised at how much I didn't see. I mean, we would see things even scattered from here, you know, kind of occasionally as we got away from that poorer area. But I was amazed at the damage we didn't see. And what both our teaching assistant Raul and some of the locals there said is you know a lot of the vegetation and the greenery has grown back, whereas before that was what was so devastating, although we still saw occasional trees down, some on some buildings. So it was just kind of like a popcorn display of some damage done. But they said it was once the vegetation grew back, it didn't seem so stark to them as far as what the damage remained, although there is still damage that remains, and there's probably areas that we didn't get to that were still impacted and so still needed.
I would say it speaks a lot to the resilience of the Puerto Rican people, how they weathered this, how they, those that remained on the island, and many, we were told stories of many, many millions of people that actually left the island since that time, but how many that stayed and decided to stay have made every effort to recover, even upon their on their own.
Yeah, it was quite interesting to hear their stories. You know, despite the fact that, you know, I was surprised at how much I didn't see, to hear their stories of what they went through during those. The actual hurricane coming, being in their homes, just hearing the noise, and just it just sounded like a horrific experience, and not knowing when power would come back, and if they'd be able to get out of their homes. So that part, I just can't imagine what it would have been like to go through.
Yeah, people with flood, you know, areas that were flooding. We have heard stories of people that were without power for many months on end, which is also a resurgence, I think, in the island for solar power. And if there's any place that solar power seems to work pretty well, it would be Puerto Rico.
One of our host families just had, while we were there, installed a solar power array on their house and the battery storage system. So they were investing in a power project that would be able to sustain them if the grid went down again. Mm-hmm. This sense of resilience that we saw included investing for the future, at least among those who could afford it. And I think the biggest criteria that I could see as far as where we saw damage and where we were, that it was people with money had made the repairs, and people without money were still struggling.
Mm-hmm. I know you talked about the power system a lot, a little bit. That was kind of a big issue over the last year. I know that a lot of people for a long time were running off of generators. Did you find that was still the case when you guys were there, or had many people gotten back onto the grid?
The places where we were. So mm-hmm. we didn't notice anybody using generators, but I'm sure there were plenty of generators around.
Yeah. One of the unique things there at in the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico is that their utilities are, they have a single public water utility and they have a single public power utility. And with the vast stretches of highline wire, it is very susceptible to hurricanes, which the island is susceptible to on a more regular basis than not.
So to move a little bit into those Bible experiences, what was it like studying the Gospel of Mark in this context? And try to ignore the fact that the professor is here and talk around.
Well, we were also joined in. I have to bring in Candida, who was a Quaker that was with us as well, and she. I think she actually led us in the first first sermon. You have to look at from a different lens. You put a different lens on when you're with people that are looking at the scriptures in a different way, and that's the value of having this. Intercultural study, because we share many of the same ideas, but we also have a different lens in which we look at some of the scriptures.
The process where we would hear the scriptures read, both English and Spanish, and then we would split up into groups based on our more comfortable language we speak in. And we would answer some questions in general about the scripture and discuss things in the small groups, report back out. Then we would hear the sermons, the two sermons, one in English and one in Spanish from the various people as we took turns throughout the week. Then we would open again for general discussion. And so my takeaway on all of that is a couple things. Sometimes we have the same questions and comments, no matter what our backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Other times, the interpretation does lend a lot based on our background and our experience, whatever that may be. And some of the sermons you could hear some on from the Spanish folks reference to their reference Puerto Rico, whether it was something they need to do to improve or just something they've experienced. But then again, that's not unlike any Sunday sermon I would hear in a church here. Often they reference what has been the experience of that neighborhood. And so this time we got to hear it in the Puerto Rican context.
Can you guys share any particular stories in Mark that really you won't look at the same way now that you've been interpreting them in context? Are there any that really stand out and that stuck in your mind of other interpretations that you had that overlooked like you were describing?
Well, one which was interesting, and it was interesting because Raul was giving his sermon, which he was technically the English speaker, I think, that night. I get confused, but because he is Puerto Rican, he gave a Puerto Rican slant on it, and it was when Jesus was being baptized and coming up out of the water, and then when he went to the wilderness and was tempted, he likened that to Puerto Rico, the baptism being a hurricane, and then some struggles after. The hurricane, their temptations, or their being in the wilderness, and then the coming back, the resilience. That was an interesting way to look at that story of Jesus' baptism, and whether you take that and translate it to another person's experience. That was an interesting take.
The feeding of the 5,000, and how in Puerto Rico, how that was interpreted as not just in an act that Jesus performed, but it's also in the way of communal sharing that occurred during the time of the hurricane, where families and communities came together, shared food, cooked in common areas, and brought what they had. And shared what they had in common.
I can give two examples. We studied the stilling of the storm. There were interpretations that related that directly to the experience of the hurricane. Mm-hmm. And there were also interpretations that connected it to our inner struggles, the need for inner peace. And so we heard both of those. It was actually from Puerto Ricans and both from folks from the North. It didn't necessarily divide out into a deep cultural division. But certainly the story of the storm brought out some very intense feelings related to what people have experienced there, both inwardly and outwardly. Another example was our study of the women at the tomb who were told to announce the resurrection. And Susan actually preached that night for the English speakers, and there was a discussion about the barriers that might keep people from hearing or proclaiming the gospel, whether because of gender or culture or language. And that brought out some study, feeling the need for assurance around the freedom to express herself,
the empowerment. Yeah.
And then she got reassured by some of the older members of the Vegabaha Church that, yes, the Spirit does call and empower women. And so I actually thought the young woman would be a good candidate for the seminary someday, but keep her in mind.
Always working that outreach. Always keep it in mind. Dan, I should have asked this earlier, but how many times have you been to Puerto Rico?
I've kind of lost count. I've been there several times to teach just Puerto Ricans and their institute. I've led now three intercultural seminars for Bethany with graduate students going and sharing there with folks much like this course. Mm.
And what was new for this visit? Were there any experiences that you had just never seen before? Something that really just made you rethink Puerto Rico, or was it pretty similar to your past experiences?
I think the struggles around hurricane recovery and the concerns for either leaving or staying were more intense now than in the past. Of course, there have been other hurricanes, but this Rio is a particularly severe case of destruction, and so that was a difference this time. I think another difference this time was that our group was smaller in terms of travelers. So I wonder if that made it more feasible for folks to host us. I think that the opportunities that we had for hospitality were particularly rich at this time. A lot of gracious gifts of hospitality that was amazed by over and over again. And so that was even a step up from some other trips I've had there. Although the hospitality in Puerto Rico has always been amazing.
Well, I think we're wrapping up, but I do have to ask one last thing. I remember as soon as you guys got back, it was in the middle of the prayer section of Common Meal, and Jack came in and said something about deer, that Dan managed not to hit a deer this time, and I wasn't sure exactly. I do need the context for that.
Well, I have to applaud Dan for negotiating those narrow roads through the mountains, which would have put me, I would have been clinging to the steering wheel most of the time. But Dan, you want to explain why there are deer in Puerto Rico? We did find that out later on. But yes, we assured him there was no deer in Puerto Rico.
We didn't see any deer in Puerto Rico. I have had a couple of accidents with deer in my commute between rural Ohio and here in Richmond, Indiana. So I guess my reputation precedes me. But the driving in Puerto Rico is challenging for a variety of reasons, and I did a happy dance when I returned the rental van with no damage.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for joining us for this interview, and I hope the last, I think we are technically at the very end of the Jan term now, that everything is in and the grades are about to come out. So I hope that it wraps up happily for everyone, especially Dan, who's the one doing the grading.
Thank you for tuning in to our latest episode of Like a Mustard Seed, and keep an eye out for our next episode. Till then, be blessed, stay rooted.